This is Phil Farron, and I am driving home. It's Thursday today. I'm not sure if I'm coming in tomorrow for any time. I do have a friend who spent hundreds of hours, 2.5 years, building an Enterprise D, a 1701D, and I've seen some pictures of it, and it is cool. It really looks cool, and he actually has it in at, he works at my major client, he actually has it in, I guess it's in a closet from what my other friend says, but it's all lit up with the LED lights and everything, and it looks cool, so I may just swing by headquarters for a little bit tomorrow so I can go up and see my friend's arch project, because from what I understand he did a beautiful job on it, but it was a lot of work. It is today episode 156, which is the 3-year anniversary, and nobody is riding with me. For those of you who have listened to this podcast in the past, you know that we normally mark the yearly anniversary with some sort of special show. The first year, my son-in-law rode with me. The second year, my daughter rode with me. I actually had a buddy who was going, well, I thought he was going to not necessarily ride with me, but at least do a show together. But he backed out on me, so... And I could have gotten somebody else. I could have. But it has been a busy week. And so the closer I got to it, and the adventures that I had this week, I just thought, you know, it'll be fine. It's fine. It's no problem. So you just stuck with me for the three... For the 3-year anniversary, episode 156. Let's see. What was the last? I think I mentioned that Lizzie had gotten called up to the big leagues. That's right. And we were going to go last Thursday night to go hear Betty and the Baldwin. We did that. It was fun. 5 women, 1 guy, doing improv. It was fun, and I think I mentioned that I felt like Lizzie would be crazy not to avail herself of this opportunity, and my daughter was not crazy, so she was going to be doing it, and in fact, she did accept their very gracious and kind invitation. In addition to that, we did have our final performance on Monday night, for our graduating ceremony for our class, and that it went very well. I will tell you a little bit about that in a moment, but I had another exciting occurrence come up. I have had through my life some odd neurological things. I mean, just aside from the normal odd neurological existence that I lead, just from being me, I have had some odd neurological events happen. Remember once I was in high school and someone had brought in some kind of evergreen oil or something. I took a sniff of it, and within very little time at all, I started getting numb, and before it was all said and done, like the whole side of my body was all numb. And eventually it cleared up, you know, within an hour or so. But, I mean, for a while I couldn't talk, and I was like, ah, ah, ah. So that stuff has happened. And then there's been occasional things where there'll be these weird spots in my eyes. And I'll check both eyes, and it's not part of the ocular system because it's in both eyes simultaneously. It's back in... Well, it's not a part of my eyes, I should say. It's back part of, you know, back in my vision center in my brain. And it will kind of spread, and there have been times when it has developed to the point where I've had word salad, where I can't get my words out, and if I try to spell stuff, I can't remember how stuff is spelled. Needless to say, this is somewhat inconvenient. Thankfully, it never lasts very long. You know, it usually only lasts maybe an hour. The spots will start up, and then they'll get going for about a half hour, you know, 45 minutes, and then the word salad will come on. And it's usually accompanied by kind of a low-grade headache. It's not really a bad, bad headache, but kind of a low-grade headache. But I have noticed, and it doesn't happen much. It only happens like once every 2 years or so. But it usually is around sometimes of fairly high stress in my life. Like we're launching a huge project or we're just pounding trying to get something done. And so I have equated it to some kind of a stress reaction or something, or if I'm not getting enough exercise or, you know, whatever. So that hit me on Monday. Now, I should say that, A, I'm trying to get part 4, book 3 of Grumpy Old Prophets done, and this is like, I'm at the hinge point of the entire series. I mean, this whole series is really going to get made or broken on what's going to happen in the next 10 or 12 pages in this book. So, you know, no pressure there. In addition to that, I had the final performance for the Skinny Improv Monday night. In addition to that, I've got one of the projects at my major clients is on the cusp of going into production. And another one had just dropped back in on me. One I had been working on that we took a hiatus on because we were trying to get, had just dropped back in on me. And we had made the decision that we were going to do a hard cutover. I think I mentioned this last week too, that we are going hot to production. No beta testing, nothing. Because of the situation, it's like, oh man. This is not my favorite way of doing things. So I was just plowing on Monday, just plowing through the data, trying to get it set up, trying to make sure. And I could kind of feel this coming on and stuff. Sure enough, you know, I don't know, 1-ish or so, 1:30-ish in the afternoon, you know, the spot started up in my eye and I was like, oh, here we go. I was able to get my work finished and the word salad had lifted enough by 3:30 or so that I was able to have a meeting and get that done. But I had a conversation with the person I was going to have the meeting with like at 2:30, and I really had to focus to get my words out. And so I was actually talking to a buddy about this on Tuesday morning, and we got to chatting about it, and he said, you know what it sounds like? He said, I get migraines. He said, it sounds like migraines. Because I was kind of numb on, you know, one side of my body, on my face and arm. And he said, does your head hurt? I said, well, a little. Not really bad, just a little. I mean, I can definitely feel a little pressure. But not bad. And so I went home, and I had told Ned about it, my wife, and she was like, okay, you need to get to the doctor. And I'm like, no, really, I think I'm fine. You know, I'm fine. She said, well, I just have never heard of migraines where your head isn't splitting. And so I went ahead and looked it up, and thank God for Google. So, and in fact, there are things called silent migraines. And there's a thing called migraine with aura. And I'm reading down this list, and I'm like, yeah, this is exactly what I'm talking about. Word salad, you know, hard to think, numbness on the side of the face, blah, 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 blah. They did say in there, they said, you should get to a doctor immediately to make sure it's not. Well, this has happened to me over the last 10 years. It's probably happened 2 or 3 times, maybe 4 times. So if it was a stroke or a tumor, I think I would have known by now. So anyways, that was pretty exciting, and I suffered the after effects of that. It was really yesterday morning before I finally felt whole again. Thankfully, as I was walking out of headquarters Monday night, it had pretty much dissipated. And as soon as I started getting ready for Skinny Improv, running by and getting some salad, that kind of stuff, while I was still a little off kilter, I was certainly not enough that it was affecting my speech, and I was certainly not enough that it was affecting my delivery. So that was good, because I would have had to bail, which I wouldn't have liked to do that. But we had ourselves a really great little graduation ceremony. I mean, it was fun. It was just fun. I guess the other level one class ended up with only three of their own in their final performance. And then one of ours in our class, Steven, had to go over and do his performance with them because he couldn't make our performance, which that's really hard just to drop in with people you didn't know and do a performance with them in improv, because improv is really about relationships and is about pacing and, you know, anyways, I guess they only had like, you know, 10, 15 people there for ours, and we filled up half the room, so there was enough people there that we could get them laughing, and it was fun. There was 8 of us, and I personally just had a blast. And I actually got one set that was just nearly perfect. It was just nearly perfect. And it was part of Kennedy. I'm gonna get to my topic today. I'm gonna be home before I get to my topic. It was part of Kennedy, which Kennedy, there's 3 columns, and you just have the audience fill in random things in these 3 columns, and then you pick one from each column, and you got to do improv on that. So the 3 columns were things you'd find in your grandmother's attic, and the next column was bad Christmas gifts you've received, and the last column was emotion. And so the set that I and Bria, who's the other young lady that was in our class, the set that we got was Model T Ford for Grandma's Attic. Jam of the Month Club, and then Frustrated. And this was like, oh, of course this is easy. You know? So I looked at Bria and I said, Susie! And of course then everybody starts chuckling. I can't remember exactly what I said, but it was something like, Susie, I don't understand why you and your college buddies thought it was so funny to build a Model T Ford in my attic. How am I going to get this out of here? You know, of course, people are laughing. And Bria just played it to the hilt. She said, Grandma, she said, you know, I understand, but, you know, come on over here to the back. Come on to the back and look in the trunk. Look in the trunk. And so she pantomimes opening the trunk, and she picks up this box, and she hands it to me, and she says, it's Jelly of the Month Club. And I looked at her, and I said, I'm diabetic. And, of course, the place just explodes, you know. And that was the end of the scene. But if the pacing was good, everything was good. And almost everybody, I think everybody, got at least one good liner. And Old Man Willie, I've talked about Old Man Willie. Old Man Willie closed the show. He had the last line, and it was fabulous. He did a great job. So we had fun. It was fun. If I was writing full time, yeah, no question, I'd keep doing it, because it is fun. So, you know, if there's a good improv theater around near you and they actually give classes, it's worth doing. It's fun. Anyway, since I'm like 5-7 minutes from home here, today's topic is Facebook, the encyclopedia of beauty. I actually had a small reaction to Facebook before I read this article. And then once I picked this article up, I was like, oh, yeah, I'm talking about this. We have some family friends. And I was on Facebook because I'd gotten an email that said, you have notifications pending, which for a while, they didn't send you those emails. And I think a lot of people quit coming to Facebook. So they were like, come back to Facebook. So I'm one of those people that doesn't come unless I either get an email or I'm trying to get somebody to read my book. So I got one of these notifications. I went and I saw some of our family friends had uploaded a new picture. And the wife is a very attractive woman and the husband is a fine looking man. And so they had like a new picture on there and there were people commenting on it. I don't know what the picture was for. But I noticed that one of the other lady friends of hers had commented about the fact that, oh, you know, you look just like a model. You could be a model. And I got to thinking about that. And I thought, you know, why is that? What? I mean, I know why we have those reactions. And I'll get to that before we're all said and done talking. But on the heels of that, then, I came across this article by Amanda Enayati. E-N-A-Y-A-T-I, called Facebook, the Encyclopedia of Beauty, or the New Encyclopedia of Beauty, something. And she starts out talking about a young lady named Amanda Coleman. That Amanda Coleman, one day last year, decided to quit Facebook. She just quit. She was the president of her sorority. And she said it wasn't any one thing, it was just sort of an accumulation of things. She said she noticed that more and more and more, every conversation, Facebook came up in every conversation. And she noticed more and more that the gals in her sorority were coming to her and crying that they were stressed out. And as they talk about it, what these gals were stressed out about was their insecurities that were often fueled by social networking sites. She said that these young women knew they were supposed to be in college to study, but they were literally spending hours on the computer, obsessing over their photos and their statuses, comparing themselves to their friends, seeing who has the best photo, who looks cute, who has the most comments on their status updates, just obsessing over this stuff. And the question was, well, what has changed? Obviously, this exaltation of beauty has been going on for a really long time. And it's Amanda Coleman's opinion, that in the old days, when it was movie stars and singers and celebrities and those types of things, there was kind of this unstated understanding that, well, yeah, but lands, they're this tiny little percentage up there. They're nearly unobtainable to get up to that level. And so it was kind of fictional in some ways. And instead of that, now, in the words of the article, which I'm going to come back to this, in the words of the article, the field of competition has expanded dramatically. In the words of the article, now you're competing with the best pictures and the ebullient status updates of every girl you know. Stressing them out. And Amanda Coleman was saying, that among some of her girls, this constant self-comparisons and escalating insecurities was actually translating into food deprivation and incessant exercise. And that would then lead these young women to the seamier side of social networks. Finspiration, Finspro, sites that are specifically dedicated to trying to get, I'm getting my mail, trying to get women to idolize anorexia, really, really thin, thin body types. So that's not so good. And so, just a second, let me get straightened around here. I will not drive into my driveway and try to park in my garage. Let me just go ahead and get parked and go through the rest of it real quick because I'm home already. And she said, this Amanda Coleman said that she also noticed that these feelings of insecurity were oddly contagious. And in addition to all that, it seems like now that when we have people who are saying, well, this is what beauty is supposed to be, that this is what beauty is supposed to be, that a lot of times they're activists and they're activists for things that are not healthy. In the words of the article, what's more, we're now dealing with a fluctuating scenario where the people we are most worried about are actually creating the media itself. Okay, so, you know, you've got this whole morass going on. And it's interesting because I hadn't heard of the term before this, and now I've seen the term pop up a couple of times. There have been some studies done on Facebook to see if it's actually better to be on Facebook. Does that help your self-esteem, your self-image, or does it hurt it? And there have been some conflicting studies that say, some say, well, yeah, it does help. And then others say, well, sometimes it leads to a condition that they have termed Facebook depression because your life just isn't as good as the rest of your friends on Facebook. They did refer to one interesting study in 2011 from the University of Haifa that found that the more time adolescent girls spent on Facebook, the more likely they were to develop a negative body image and eating disorders. And then this was one phrase out of the article that I went, right. If you have a girl put up a photo of herself very thin and scantily clad, and a slew of comments tells her that she looks beautiful and hot, that's where you run into problems because others might seek that same reward. Okay, so the article goes on, and it doesn't really necessarily come to any huge conclusions. Aside from the fact it says, well, you know, parents need to spend more time talking to their kids and being aware of the messages that are coming to their kids. And, you know, the studies say that if you start the conversation earlier with your kids, it'll be better, yada, 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 yada. But when I read all this, I keep coming back to what is the core issue. What is the central lie that the flesh is telling women that gives this push, that provides this distraction? Because this distraction of being all caught up in my body image and what I look like and people like me, that slows you down from real life. This distraction of incessant exercising and starving, that robs you from actually living life. And therefore, it's quite easy for me to look at that and say, that's flesh. So what is that core issue, core lie? Is there a central core lie that the flesh is using? And if we discover that and get a flashlight on it, can we disrupt it that way? The article did touch on the reaction of some of stars, some celebrities to all of this. And I think one of their reactions is telling. And I'm going to use that to kind of jump off into my little discussion of, I think, what's going on. I'm just going to start reading from the article. Last November, on the heels of a barrage of cruel, misogynistic jokes and YouTube videos about her weight, 18-year-old Miley Cyrus posted a photograph of an emaciated woman alongside a tweet that said, "By calling girls like me fat, this is what you're doing to other people." She also shared an image of Marilyn Monroe with the caption, "Proof that you can be adored by thousands of men even when your thighs touch." So what is the focus here? When you step back from all of this, why is it important to be hot, to be good looking, to be adored by thousands of men? Why is that important? And I would submit to you that the central lie that the flesh is propagating in all of this, that drives all of this behavior, is you will not find safety and comfort and success outside being able to attract a protector. I mean, this base attitude and this base approach is throughout nature. When you see the mating rituals of species after species, where men, males in the species, males, not men, when males in the species win the right to mate with a woman because of their displays of power and because they fight, this idea that a female is protected, a female is cared for, if she can attract the strongest male, it is rife through nature. Because there is some truth to it in nature. But see, we don't need to be driven by nature and by the mechanisms in nature. We need to do a better job looking at that lie and saying, no. In our society, the way it exists now with the opportunities, women do not simply have to rely on their attractiveness so that they can find a man who will protect them and take care of them and give them a good life. One of the things that I started early on with my daughter was that we would work on giving her capabilities, giving her mental discipline, giving her the tool set whereby which she could attack problems and achieve them. And from a fairly early age, I let my daughter know, A, you're not starting dating till you're 16, because I personally feel if you start early than that, you really don't have a chance to learn who you are as a person before who you are is all wrapped up in having somebody else around. But then B, I told her over and over again, look, you are going to college, and I am not paying for a wedding until you get a college degree. Why? Because college is your own accomplishment. And the fact that she ended up, I've told the story before on this podcast, the fact that she ended up with an actuarial degree has been of great benefit to their family, to her and her hubby and her precious little daughter. But beyond that, it has given her something that is hers that she can succeed with, that she can make money with. It's a valuable skill. And it doesn't ever help that when we go to a class like the improv class and we're sitting down and we're going around and tell us what you do, who you are. Well, you know, I'm Elizabeth Beauchamp and I'm an actuary. A what? Always the reaction. A what? Well, they're the people that figure out when you're going to die, so we know how much to charge you for insurance. Mathematics, statistics. You can just see people go, oh. Doesn't have anything to do with what she looks like. Now, she happens to be cute. Okay. My daughter's attractive. I mean, she's not cutesy-cutesy model cute, but my daughter's an attractive woman. And honestly, she gets more and more attractive every year because everything is settling in her spirit, and there's a strength to her, and there's a kindness and a discipline to her. And yeah, proudest accomplishment of my life. But that understanding that there is more to your life than just who you can attract to keep you safe and give you comfort, that would undercut a lot of this foolishness about body issues and obsessing over Facebook as to whether or not someone had a cuter photo and they got more comments about, oh, you're so cute and you're so hot and that. Because if your whole life is just wrapped up in who's looking at me now, who's looking at me now, that is a really pitiful existence. There's a final quote in here that's kind of interesting. Quote, and I think this is Coleman again, Amanda Coleman. She says, Coleman, who now is a college senior on the verge of graduation, said she recognizes that social networks are a huge communication tool, huge tool for communication and being connected. Quote, but unfortunately, they've also taken on the role of teaching girls to depict themselves in certain ways and to constantly compare themselves to each other, she said. Maybe we need a new way of teaching young people about privacy, discretion, and moderation, and that sometimes less is more. Okay, well, that's true. And the way to teach young women that is good relationships with their parents and good relationships with good friends who have a better understanding about what life is about as opposed to just being attractive. But it's not Facebook that's teaching them that. It's the flesh that is using this primal configuration to turn it into a lie, to feed these feelings of inadequacy, to feed these feelings of doubt and fear that the only way you're going to be safe is if you get some guy to take care of you. And if we would spend more time shining a flashlight on that, those cockroaches would scatter. Because as I'm constantly fond of saying, if you're having an emotional reaction to something, whether it's fear or disgust or concern, you really need to get underneath and see what belief is driving that emotion. And if you do that and you have a chance to look at it and admit to yourself that that's the truth, you can push that emotion out of the way. Because I would dare say that a lot of these young women who are obsessing about this, if you would put it in stark black and white and say, okay, really, are you really saying that you believe that the only way you're going to find comfort and security is by being attractive enough to get some guy to marry you? Many of them might say, no, no. And in the process of that, those emotions might begin decreasing to the place that they could get a better handle on them. I have talked a really long time. It is the 3-year episode, and I have made it home.